A gruesome injury in Major League Baseball last night has sparked a debate online. Let's weigh in. Yes, welcome into the First Pitch Podcast, your daily source of baseball talk here on the Inside Baseball Network. I'm your host, Troy Brock. You can find me on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. He's Drew Crabtree. You can find him on the Twitter machine at DrewCrabtree12. And we are going to get to the Tyler Callahan injury in the Reds-Braves game last night. But first, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when another episode just like this goes live. If you're listening on audio, share the show with your friends, leave us a five-star rating. It helps us out tremendously. Send your friends to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get their daily source of baseball talk. Drew, how you doing this morning?
You know, I'm all right. It's a little gross up here in tropical Toledo, Ohio. You know, we had some storms last night and still raining this morning, so it's kind of putting a damper on a beautiful Tuesday morning, but you know, we're here.
Yeah, we are here. I'm supposed to be getting that rain at some point later on today, and then it's supposed to rain until through next Monday. So I feel you on that. But we had some baseball yesterday, some good and some bad, and one game was postponed due to some rain in Washington. But the rest of them that were scheduled to take place took place. And the first of those was the Dodgers at the Marlins. Dodgers did what they were supposed to do, and they won 7-4 to move to 24-11. Marlins fall to 13-21. Kirby Yates got his first save of the year. Ben Kasperias is now 4-0 with a 2.81 ERA, and Sandy Alcantara is now 2-4 with an 8.42 ERA. Padres at the Yankees, one of the best series this week. 4-3 Padres victory. Padres move to 23-11. Yankees fall to 19-16. Robert Suarez picks up his 14th save of the season. Reds at the Braves. Braves win that one 4-0. AJ Smith Shaver got the win. He's 2-2 with a 3.00 ERA. Brady Singer took the L, 4-2 with a 3.66 ERA. And AJ Smith Shaver had a no hitter going very late into that game, I think the eighth inning. But we are, like I said, we are going to talk about the injury a little bit later on. So outside of the injury, Drew, any other thoughts on last night's game?
Smith Shaver was dealing, you know, like you said. It took him until the first batter of the eighth inning, Santiago Espinal, to give up a hit. He was fantastic. The Reds managed to work five walks off of him, but they just could not hit the ball where the Braves weren't, because it wasn't like he was striking. He wasn't mowing them down. He finished with five strikeouts over eight innings, and like, that's something that you should be able to work with. Yeah, it was super disappointing when it came to the plate. Brady Singer, outside of, you know, what transpired there, was great. You know, well, good. Six innings, seven hits, which, you know, one of them, four runs all earned somehow, two walks, two Ks, and then he did give up. He was credited with giving up a home run, to which we will get to later. Brady Singer did what he was supposed to do for the most part. And the Reds lineup has gone ice cold. It's really annoying, but that's something that we're kind of rolling with this year, is the whole hot and cold up and down-ness of the Reds lineup. I'm starting to get a little concerned about Matt McClain, though.
Yeah, and not to be remiss, this is another one of the better series this week, despite the two teams' records. But the Braves are now 16-18, Reds are 18-18, and the Braves continue to show that they are one of the preeminent pitching factories in Major League Baseball with the emergence of AJ Smith Shaver. Giants at the Cubs. Cubs take that one 9-2. And both teams are now 22-14. Matthew Boyd got the win, 3-2, 2.75 ERA. And Roop got the loss, 2-3, 4.89 ERA. Royals hosted the White Sox and won 3-0. They did not play kind as the host. The Royals are now 20-16. White Sox fall to 10-25. Cole Reagan's got the win, 2-1, 3.79 ERA. And Carlos Estevez picked up his 10th save of the year. Brewers beat the Astros 5-1 in Milwaukee. They are now 18-18. Astros fall to 17-17. Myers got the win, 1-0, 3.65 ERA. Rodel Blanco took the L, 2-3, but he did lower his ERA to sub-5 at 4.98. Cardinals hosted the Pirates and beat them 6-3. They are now 17-19. Pirates fall to 12-24. Graceffo got the win, 2-0, 7 even ERA. Shugart got the loss, 1-2, 3.68 ERA. And Ryan Helsley picked up his 6th save of the year. Mets and D-backs played a, looks like, exciting game up there in Arizona. But the Mets did win 5-4. Mets are now 23-13. Diamondbacks fall to 18-17. Griffin Canning got the win, 5-1, 2.50 ERA. Ryan Nelson picked up the L, 1-1, 5.48 ERA. Edwin Diaz picked up his 8th save of the year. Remember when I said faking injuries? 5-11 innings. Mariners at the Athletics. Athletics won 7-6. They are now 20-16. Mariners fall to 20-14, only one game ahead of those Athletics. Harris got the win, 1-0, 2.16 ERA. And Legumina. He got the loss, 2-1 with a 3 ERA. I went to school in Alabama. I can't read.
Reds legend.
Is he really?
Well, he was a former Red, and he was kind of awful. But, yeah, he was a Red up until last year.
Huh. All righty, then. Well,
yeah, Casey Legumina.
Legumina. Okay. Well, there you go. That was all of today's games, or yesterday's games. We will get to today's games later on in the show. But, you know, Edwin Diaz faked an injury a couple weeks ago to get out of balking a batter. And last night there was an injury that was 100% not faked in the Cincinnati Reds and Atlanta Braves ball game. Matt Olson hit a ball down the left field line. Austin Riley was on base. And Tyler Callahan, Reds rookie, I think this was his third game in Major League Baseball. Third or fourth game in Major League Baseball after debuting last week, was running to his left towards the wall in left field. And we're not going to show the video. If you want to see it, you can look it up. It's all over Twitter. It's pretty gruesome, I will warn you. And in the process, he caught the ball. He 100% caught the ball. There is no denying that. He 100% caught the ball. Full-on, Dez Bryant caught the ball. Tyler Callahan also caught the ball. But then he plowed into the wall in foul territory down the left field line. And his arm pulled a Harry Potter. For those who understand that reference, it completely shattered and bent in ways it is not supposed to bend. And it was very gruesome. In the process, after he caught the ball, took 2 steps, plowed into the wall, and then fell on the ground in pain, while he was lying on the ground, the ball rolled out of his glove because it was his glove hand that shattered. The ball rolled out of his glove. The umpires ruled it not a catch. The base runners continued to run. It wound up being an inside the park home run, scoring 2 of the 4 runs that the Braves scored in that ball game. The Reds challenged the play, challenged the call of not a catch, and the MLB Umpire Association, because, you know, unions, they stuck with their boys and said, you know what, their call was right on the field, and they confirmed it. Not only said that it stands, they said it was confirmed. So there's a lot to unpack here. And before I say anything else, now that I've laid out the situation here at hand, no pun intended, Drew, the floor is yours.
I don't understand, honestly. So what I do understand is the rule at hand. So the rule is, from Major League Baseball, a catch is a fielder securing possession of a ball in flight with their hand or glove and maintaining control until they voluntarily and intentionally release it. Essentially, the fielder must demonstrate secure control of the ball and a voluntary release for the catch to be legal. I get it. He, by the rule of the law, he did not voluntarily release the ball. I don't think that he had much of a choice, because there were no ligaments left in his forearm. Saying he pulled a Harry Potter is about as apt as it gets. Because if you've seen Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, Harry you know, injures his hand playing Quidditch, and then the moron professor literally removes his bones, and it bends all the way back. When Callahan hit the wall, it literally hit and bent at a 90 degree angle. I don't think he had any, there was no possibility that he had control over his fingers and his grip strength when his radius and ulna were shattered, and the fact and the muscles and tendons and ligaments in his arm are going to be destroyed. I understand the rule. It's stupid. It is an incredibly dumb rule when it comes to injuries. I wrote an article for Athlon Sports, and it is legitimately just this rant. And I've shared it, and the majority of the comments that I've gotten are, you can't really legislate this kind of thing out. I fully disagree, because if a guy catches it, smacks into a wall, obliterates his arm, and is on the ground writhing in pain, yelling in a way that you can hear it on the broadcast, I don't think that he's faking it to preserve a ground rule double. If his arm shatters and bends at a 90 degree angle, I don't think that he's faking it. So when there is a legitimate case for an injury like this, my proposal is to treat it like a ground rule double. Like, you know, whenever it gets stuck in the wall, when an outfielder is running and it gets slightly kind of sort of lodged into the bottom of the wall, which that rule is kind of dumb as it is. But my whole thing with this is, it is incredibly rigid and incredibly cold, honestly, to say that Tyler Callahan did not make that catch. If it were football, obviously it's not football, but if it were football, he made two steps and he made a baseball move, which was essentially bracing himself to crash into the wall. In football, that would have been a fumble. Unless he was in the end zone, then it would have been a touchdown. It's the same thing here. He made the catch. He put 2 feet down, had full possession of it, hit the wall. If that wall were 6 inches to the left, if that, it would have been a completed catch. But because the fact that he ran into the wall at full bore and completely obliterated his arm, taking away any possibility of him using that left hand in general, he's punished. And it was ruled, like you said, an inside the park home run, which I find to be incredible. So there are, I understand the nuance of this, and I understand that it's baseball and you have to do what you have to take advantage of what's in front of you. I don't know if I could stomach myself. Now, I speak as someone who was god awful at baseball. I don't know if I could stomach if I hit a ball and the kid is on the ground writhing in pain. I don't know if I'm going to, you know, walk my happy little butt around the bases and take advantage of it and, you know, get an inside the park home run. I'm not fully blaming Matt Olson for taking advantage of it, because probably to him it was, you know, he is just what you have to do. And in baseball, that's kind of what it is. You have to do what you have to do. Runs usually are at a premium and so on. But like you said last week or a couple weeks ago with the Edwin Diaz thing, and then also with the PitchCom thing, pitchers act like they're hurt, or they act like their PitchCom is messed up to avoid a balk or avoid a pitch clock violation. I'm willing to go out on a limb and say that Tyler Callahan was not faking shattering his arm to prevent Matt Olson from his home run. So my whole thing is, maybe this game has been around for a while. Maybe let's have a tiny bit of humanity when it comes to these kind of things. because there's no, there's, there, this is, it's a once or twice a year kind of thing where an outfielder crashes into the wall, gets hurt, and then we have this whole thing. Lindsey Crosby, former host, great writer and podcaster, and he put out his own, you know, post game on his Substack, and he put it perfectly from a Braves perspective as well. And he said that, you know, the Braves were on the opposite end of this 4 years ago when Ronald Acuña tore his ACL and Jazz Chisholm took advantage of it for an inside the park home run. It's just one of those things where you got to think about the player, because Tyler Callahan, this is who he is. He's the kind of guy that sells out. He puts his body on the line and he sells out. And his injury report throughout his career is a testament to that. In 2021, he laid out to make a play, tore up his elbow, didn't figure it out until he threw the ball back in, and there was a pop. He had to get Tommy John as a fielder. The following year, he was healthy, driving back, got into a car accident, tore something in his thumb, set him down for a couple of months. Last year, he, on two different occasions, he got hurt because he's, you know, trying to make a play. Early on in the year, busts his finger trying to make a bunt. And then later on in the year, I think it was in August, it was the same exact play. He's running to his right to make a play down the left field line, catches it, runs into the wall, hurts his hand. Thankfully, at least at that point, it wasn't nearly as serious. But the whole thing to me is that there was no possibility that he did not catch that ball. And it wasn't like he dropped it like, you know, me in the outfield. It wasn't like he actually dropped it. He didn't have an opportunity to make that decision. He crashed into the wall and honestly, and probably lost all control of from here on. Like, what is he supposed to do in that instance? It's heartless, but you know, that's, you know, America. You kind of just have to deal with it at this point. And I said that in the Athlon Sports article, is baseball is America's pastime, and it gives us both the best and the worst of who we are. And the worst is that it's just straight up cold numbers, and you take advantage of what's in front of you, regardless of how right or ethical it may be. I'm just like, losing the game, it is what it is. The Reds were going to lose that game because even with that inside the park home run, they would have lost 2-0. It was what it was. The lineup was not hitting. I do think that injury deflated them completely. Their demeanor throughout the game was quite quiet and somber because of the fact that they just watched that happen. And I think the Reds have benefited from stuff like that before. And I'm willing to say that if it were the other way around, they probably would have called it a catch. But it's just one of those things that makes me really disappointed in Major League Baseball. Because, yeah, I get it. There could be guys out there that fake injuries. But like you said on that podcast with the Edwin Diaz thing, if you got a guy that is hurt or hurt that causes a stoppage of play, in this case, Callahan getting hurt, maybe call it a ground rule double at that point, considering the fact that he's writhing in pain on the ground, unable to stand up because he's dealing with this, they need at least a 10-day IL stint. And it would be the same thing if a guy was faking it in the outfield. You know, you stop play, you have to get taken out the game, you got to go on IL. And It's just, honestly, it's just super disappointing that this is the way that it played out. Super disappointing for Tyler, because he finally got up to the major league level. His wife is 2 or 3 weeks away from giving birth. Legitimately, they said on the broadcast, not yesterday, but on Sunday, because they're still in Cincinnati, that they have an OBGYN in Louisville, just in case he gets sent down. They have an OBGYN in Cincinnati, and they have plans for if she goes into labor at any point while he's up with the big league club. It's just, I don't know. The whole thing just pisses me off. Not because it was a Reds player. I mean, obviously there's the emotional part of it, because I am emotionally attached to my favorite teams, for better or for worse. But it's just the fact that his arm, and you can see it on the broadcast. Like, the broadcast, literally, John Sadak said, "We're going to show you the replay. If you can't handle these things, look away, and we will tell you when it's over." You could hear on the broadcast when they showed the replay on the big screen in Truist Park when the fans reacted. Like, he was wearing a red wrap right here. I don't know if it's just like a hold it in place, if it's a baseball players are weird and they have like tendencies. I'm not 100% sure, but it made it incredibly obvious that his arm was like that when it hit. And so when it's something as blatantly obvious as that, you gotta step in and do something. And I have never had any kind of confidence in MLB umpiring, especially with MLB replay review, because the Reds have been on some weird ends of those. Like, it's been as obvious as it can be, and they're just like, no, the guy on the field's got it right. You obviously see it in the NFL too, but it's way more prevalent in Major League Baseball. I'm a union guy and a union supporter and everything like that, but MLB umpire union is, it's up there with like cop unions on how powerful it is, because they have the ability to sway the game in a way that you don't see in most other sports, because we see these calls that are blatantly wrong on the field, and then they're like, all right, we're going to challenge it, and New York is like, what are you doing? No, the umpire, it doesn't matter if he was wrong, the umpire's right. So I'm looking forward to robot umps. That part of it's not going to be fixed, unfortunately, because that part of the game is the human element. But balls and strikes need to be umpire, need to be robot. But when it, just plain and simple, if I was Terry Francona, I'd have been tossed. I would have said some things that would have gotten FanDuel Sports a letter from the FCC. Like, it would have been so apparent. It would have been obvious. You would have been able to hear me from the broadcast booth. It would have been a Bobby Cox, Bobby Knight, all wrapped into one. That was one thing I loved about David Bell. It was the only thing I loved about David Bell, but that was the one thing I really loved about him. He went to fight for his players. He got thrown out of so many games, and sometimes it was just to rile him up, which is great. I don't think Tito has that kind of a dog in him, at least at this point in his life, but in this instance, he absolutely should have. He 100% should have given those umpires an earful. I don't care what Major League Baseball says when it comes to that rule. I don't. Because it was two catches and then loss of control of his arm. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about whether or not it was legitimate. And if it was me, if I was anywhere on that coaching staff, it would have... I've been thrown out of games as an assistant coach. I have a bit of a I have anger issues, but if I was Terry Francona, I would have got my money's worth. It would have been one of those, all right, we're cutting to commercial, they come back to commercial, and I'm still going. Because Tyler Callahan sold out, made the catch, and his season is probably over because he made the mistake of crashing into the left field wall. It's just disappointing. So, Troy, what are your feelings on this whole situation? I know that you're kind of in the same wavelength, especially with like the players faking injuries. You know, it just so happened that it was a Mets player that was doing it. But you know, what are your feelings on this whole, you know, pile of horse manure?
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of things that go into this entire situation on the whole from a bunch of different inputs. And real quick, I do want to say that I too have almost been thrown out of a game as an assistant coach of my son's T-ball team. So it's yeah.
I wasn't thrown out. I was tossed. I was sent to the bus because I coached soccer. I was an assistant coach. This umpire, this ref was god awful. And I was legitimately down his throat the whole game. He came over. He's like, "Coach, I'm giving you a yellow. You got to chill out." And he had a southern accent. So I was like, "Yes, sir." And he was like, "That's enough." So he sent me off. And I was about to cut across the field. He's like, "No, walk around the field." I'm like, "You are a god-awful ref." And I got it was like the second game of that season. And I got a stern talking to from my athletic director. He's like, you can't do that. I'm like, "I know." I had to pay a fine. I had to take anger management coaching classes. It was the worst thing in the world. I shut up for the rest of the season.
Well, he is a ginger, ladies and gentlemen. But, So, first and foremost, it was 100% a catch. I don't care what the rule book says. He caught that ball. It should have been an out. And that is all there is to it. Regardless of what the umpire said on the field, he caught the ball. It wasn't regardless of what the referee said on the field 10 years ago, Dez Bryant caught the ball. It was a touchdown.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
As far as, and I agree also that of course I talked about it last week or the week before, that if Major League Baseball is worried about players faking an injury in order to stop play or to keep from bad things happening like a balk, then once they stop play for an injury, regardless of if it's real or fake, automatic injured list stint, whatever the minimum injured list stint is. If it's a position player, it's 10 days. If it's a pitcher, it's 15 days. And so, you know, that is a quick way to say, hey, we're not going to be the NBA. We're not going to be soccer. We're not going to be NFL. We're not going to have these flopping bullshit. If you're going to be hurt, you're going to be hurt, and you're not going to play for the minimum time required. And so, you know, that is that. I, as an outside perspective on this, because you know you shared Lindsay's perspective from our friend of the pod, Lindsay Crosby, who of course has the Braves perspective. You have the Reds perspective. As an outside perspective on this, I don't necessarily, and I know you said that you also understand. I understand Matt Olson continuing to run the play out. And I will also say in his defense, and this may not be the case for him, he is an elite level athlete. I am 5'9 and 200 plus pounds. Whenever I play sports, if it were me that would have hit that ball as I'm running the bases, I go into tunnel vision mode and I hear and see nothing. Of course, I hear nothing anyway. I wear hearing aids outside of the podcast, but that's beside the point. I hear and see nothing. So he may not have even known that, even though Tyler Callahan was like audibly in a lot of pain, if he goes into tunnel vision like I do, then he may not have known that Tyler Callahan was hurt at the time. So, so I will give him the benefit of the doubt on that.
Yeah.
But no, I think pretty much everything, I think I pretty much agree with everything you said. I think everything you said is pretty much spot on. They need to, there's a lot of changes that need to be made as far as that. As far as a situation like that goes. And also, like you said, it does not happen that often where a player gets hurt and then the play continues on. I don't remember it happening except the most recent before last night was the Ronald Acuna Jr. one that I remember. I'm sure there might have been others, but that's the most recent one that I can remember is the Ronald Acuna Jr. one with Jazz suck-ass Chisholm. But it's there's just so much that goes into it, and umpiring needs to be better. I don't know how in any world that's not a catch. Like, that's not an out. he caught the ball and took two steps, and as you said, made a baseball move, which not only is he following the letter of the law in Major League Baseball by just catching the ball, but he's also following the letter of the law in another sport by adhering to their dumbass rules that make no sense and they don't even understand. And so it's not a good situation any way you look at it. It's terrible for Tyler Callahan. As you said, his season is probably over, which really sucks because, as we pointed out at the beginning of this, this was his first week in Major League Baseball. He made his Major League debut last week. And, you know, it kind of gets to a point now where with his injury history, especially with the one last night, maybe they have to sit him down whenever he comes back and say, hey, you got to chill out, man. You gotta stop going 150% and, you know, dial it down to 100%. We appreciate the effort. We appreciate your love of the game. We appreciate you selling out to do what's best for your team, but we want to keep you on the field for as long as possible. And if you're going to be giving 150%, you're going to be off the field a lot. So, you know, and I'm not trying to put any blame on this on Tyler Callahan. So I do want to make that clear. There are other players in Major League Baseball who need to have that same talking to. Mike Trout is one of them, yes. But it's just, it's just so early in his career. We don't know what he's going to be, and we're still not going to know what he's going to be at the major league level until next year, maybe, because of this injury now. And it's just, it sucks all around, and it's just not a good situation. But let us know, sound off in the comments, what your thoughts on this situation are, where you stand on things, the rules, whether or not it was a catch, whether or not Matt Olson should have continued running or should have stopped. If you think he knew that Tyler Callahan was injured, I know Austin Riley knew he was injured because he like stopped, turned around, and then walked backwards over home plate because he was looking in the outfield. It's a bad situation all around. Before we get to today's games, Drew, any final thoughts on all of this?
These kind of the plays are why I have been vehemently against putting Ellie De La Cruz in the outfield, because that is a guy who knows he can cover the entire field. It doesn't matter where the ball is flying. If he's in center field, he's going to catch that baseball. He makes those plays at shortstop now, my buddy. And, you know, he's had a couple of near misses. I'm not putting Ellie De La Cruz in the outfield because he cannot turn that off. And he's way too valuable to shatter an arm like that. Growing up, outside of Ken Griffey Jr., who was another player that would always give what he can, you know, he's got that you know, infamous running into the outfield wall, catching the ball and shattering his wrist when he was with Seattle moment. I loved Ken Griffey Jr., but another Red that I loved growing up was Ryan Friel. Now, if you're an outsider looking in, who is Ryan Friel? He's this scrawny little dude that gave his all he was never, you know, fantasy baseball relevant. He was never an all-star. He was never a guy that was going to be in the contention for a face of the Cincinnati Reds. A guy that should have, that could have been, was Adam Dunn, and he was way ahead of his time. But that's a discussion for another day. But Ryan Friel, I loved because he gave 200% on every play. He had his own number of incredible plays. And I think that like his final game or one of his final moments was him laying out full on Superman style back toward the wall to catch it over his shoulder. And he crashed into the wall and it was a serious injury. I love baseball players when they give their all. That's the best part about baseball. This is a children's game that you are getting to play for millions upon millions of dollars, and you're going to Anthony Rendon it and not play? I don't get it. So I respect the absolute hell out of any MLB player that gives their all, especially when they're worth as much as they are, when they can hot dog it. There's 162 games. You can take a playoff, and they don't. So my final thought is good on Tyler Callahan for selling out for his team, because at that point it was 2-0. The game was still within reach. Sure, the Reds didn't have a hit at that point, but it was the third inning. It was the bottom of the third. There was a lot of baseball left. I will forever respect Tyler Callahan in that 32 jersey. And I really hope that once he is healthy, he gets a legitimate shot at the big league club and he just balls out.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, for sure. And not to change the subject, but before we get into today's games, I have to bring this up because we're talking about catches. And you talked about a Superman catch going away from home plate. Can we talk about real quick how Willie Mays' catch is not the best catch in the history of baseball?
Oh, that's that might be its own podcast. I mean, it was a hell of a play. I think the throw back in was probably another part of it, but you were going to anger some boomers out there.
we may have to. Yeah, I think you're right. I think we need to spend a podcast on that one day.
I think that is a prime offcast. Off-season podcast that we can really dive into because there have been a number of awesome catches and I will not confirm or deny my feelings on that catch because it is legendary. But I think you might be right. Anyway.
here's me talking about that catch on that podcast here in the future.
I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
Yeah, no, we're definitely going to have to talk about that one day. But today, we'll just go ahead and talk about the big games that we do have today. And 16 of them, thanks to a doubleheader from yesterday's Guardians-Nationals game being rained out. Also, good God, Drew, I saw something. I'm going to talk to you about that offline once we get through recording, because we may have to talk. You may have a field day with this on a podcast. 6:40 p.m. Eastern, Dodgers at the Marlins, Tony Gonsolin at Cal Quantrill. Dodgers look to move to 25-11. Marlins look to move to 14-21. 5 minutes later, 6:45 p.m. Eastern, Rangers at the Red Sox. Nathan Eovaldi at Lucas Giolito. Rangers look to move to 18-18. Red Sox look to move to 19-18. 20 minutes later, 7:05 p.m. Eastern, Phillies at the Rays. Zach Wheeler at Drew or Cole Rasmussen. I don't know which one that is. One of the Rasmussens. Phillies look to move to 20-15. Rays look to move to... Sorry?
It's true.
It's true. Oh, look, Drew. And Rays look to move to 17-18. Also at 7:05 p.m. Eastern, Padres at the Yankees. Michael King at Clark Schmidt. Padres look to move to 24-11. Yankees look to move to 20-16. 10 minutes later, 7:15 p.m. Eastern, Cincinnati Reds at Atlanta Barbs. Reds look to move to 19-18. Braves look to move to 17-18. Andrew Abbott at Chris Sale. Thoughts on today's game, Drusev?
Got a lefty-lefty matchup on the mound. That'll be fun. Andrew Abbott has been great since coming back. Chris Sale has not been, but he is left-handed. So don't be surprised if he has another great game against the Reds. They just cannot hit left-handed pitching for some reason. They got to get going. They have to get something going. Dropping back to 500. They have, a somewhat more difficult stretch here between now and the All-Star game that they really need to get something going if they want to at least keep in stride with the Cubs. So I am looking for Andrew Abbott to have a good game. I always love these matchups with the Braves. I don't know why, because I'm not old enough to remember those classic playoff matchups between the Reds and the Braves that has my high school physics teacher literally up in arms about that team. But Chris Sale has been not Chris Sale this season. And I'd like that to continue, please.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one up there. The battle of the lefties, two good pitchers on the mound. And like I said, that's one of the, regardless of the record, that's one of the better series this week. And there's a lot of good series this week. 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Giants at the Cubs. Giants, both teams look to move to 23-14. Justin Verlander at Colin Ray. Also at 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Orioles at the Twins. Orioles look to move to 14-20. Twins look to move to 16-20. Cade Povich at Pablo Lopez. Also at 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Chicago White Sox at Kansas City Royals. White Sox look to move to 11-25. Royals look to move to 21-16. Sean Burke for the Sox. Seth Lugo for the Royals. Also at 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Astros at the Brewers. Astros look to move to 18-17. Brewers look to move to 19-18. Hayden Wesneski on the mound for Houston. Patrick on the mound for Milwaukee. 5 minutes later, 7:45 p.m. Eastern, Pirates at the Cardinals. Pirates look to move to 13-24. Cardinals look to move to 18-19. It is Paul Skene's day versus Matthew Liberatore. 55 minutes later, 8:40 p.m. Eastern, Tigers at the Rockies. Tigers look to move to 23-13. Rockies look to move to 7-28. They are the only team left with fewer than 10 wins. Jackson Jobe on the mound for the Tigers. Chase Dollander on the mound for the Rockies. 58 minutes later, 9:38 p.m. Eastern, Blue Jays at the Angels. Blue Jays look to move to 17-18. Angels look to move to 14-20. TBD for the Blue Jays, Tyler Anderson for the Angels. 2 minutes later, 9:40 p.m. Eastern, Mets at the Diamondbacks. Mets look to move to 24-14. Diamondbacks look to move to 19-17. David Peterson at Zach Gallen. 25 minutes later, 10:05 p.m. Eastern, Mariners at the Athletics. Mariners look to move to 21-14. Athletics look to move to, 21-16. Hancock at Springs. 6 hours and 30 minutes before that, the Guardians at the Nationals, game one of their doubleheader. LL Ortiz on the mound for the Guardians. Jake Irvin on the mound for the Nationals. Guardians look to move to 21-14. Nationals look to move to 17-19. And immediately following that game, game two of the doubleheader, Guardians at Nationals, still Ben Lively at Lord. Any final thoughts on today's games, Jerusef?
I thought you were going to say Blake Lively for a second. It is Paul Skene's day. And right now, Paul Skene's is the betting favorite to be the NL Cy Young. He hasn't, obviously last year, he kind of took everybody by storm. And Paul Skene's is still a very, very good thrower of baseballs. But, obviously 3-3 throwout pitcher records because they're dumb. He hasn't quite been what we expect to this point. He's been great, but he hasn't been, that elite level guy. And I think that the Cardinals should be a good opportunity for him to really get back and going, because he is, he's leading the NL Central, not NL Central, NL Cy Young odds. Hunter Green's third. At this point, there's a really good possibility that the NL Central could have the top two vote getters at the Cy Young. Obviously, the guy out in San Diego whose name continues to escape me is doing incredibly well as well.
Nick but Pivetta.
Pivetta is the name that I was looking for, and he's number two. So I would like to see, obviously, I like to see the Cardinals lose, but I would like to see Paul Skenes get back to Paul Skenes things and the Pirates lose 1-0.
Where, yes. Where is do you have it pulled up, or are you just doing that off of memory?
That was off memory, based on what the Locked On Reds guys was saying yesterday when they were previewing this series, because Hunter Green should be on the mound, I think, tomorrow or Thursday.
Nice. Okay. I was just going to ask where Yamamoto was in those odds, but
he was up there.
I'm surprised he's not.
Wait, no, he was two, not Nick Pivetta. Yamamoto was two. Sorry.
Okay. Hunter Green deserves better.
He does.
For one. For two, Nick Pivetta. Nick Pivetta, former Phillies legend.
Paul Skenes deserves better.
Yes, Paul Skenes deserves better. Right now, with what we have seen to this point in the season, if my choices to put $1 million on were Paul Skenes or the field, I'm taking the field.
Oh, yeah.
But that's just me. Let us know in the comments. Do you think Paul Skenes is going to win the National League Cy Young? Sound off. And if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. Turn on the notification icon so you'll be notified when another episode just like this goes live. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star rating. Share the show with your friends. Send them to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get their daily source of baseball talk. And until our next day of baseball talk, which is tomorrow, this has been First Pitch.